Okay, so this week we have a very special guest. Mike Francesa is actually joining us, believe it or not, in just our second episode. So, Mike, I know you had a chance to listen to our show last week. We spent a lot of time talking about our football team in the all-time draft. What are your thoughts of the show, or what are your thoughts of the team? I mean, we're really excited about this team.
To go in there and waste 20 minutes of that time telling you how good everybody is when the team is a mortal embarrassment is a waste of time.
Whoa, Mike, waste of time. A lot of people seem to like this show.
Well, who's people?
Joey. I don't know about waste of time. Also, mortal embarrassment. I mean, I know we don't have a quarterback yet, but all positions being equal, our team is awesome.
In the National Football League, positions are not equal. You have to find a quarterback.
Okay, we're working on it, Mike, all right? We'll find one. We have some good plans. Have you ever considered being nice to people?
I thought about it a few times, but that's a long time ago.
A long time ago? So when would you say the last time you were nice or considered being nice was?
I can't remember. Let me see. Early 90s. 91, 92, 93.
Mike, I hope you don't mind me saying this. Please don't get offended, but why don't you be nice to people?
That's why you're a clown. Bye.
You're leaving? Oh my God. He just left. Mike Francesa really just left. Well, for the Cap Figure Podcast, I'm Ryan DiPaolo. Yeah, so that there was Mikey Francesa. He wasn't too nice there to me, but I'm great I got the interview. But then on the other hand, he emails my boss saying that I'm a clown and that I ruined a perfectly good interview. Tom, how do you feel?
Yeah, I think you're definitely costing yourself more stock options the longer you talk. You know, I have to side with Mike Francesa. He's been in the, you know, he's been in the industry for so long. He obviously knows what he's talking about.
25 years I've been doing this, and you're gonna tell me that falling asleep on the air for 1 minute is gonna determine my legacy? All right, so obviously, as said with Mike, even though he had no clue what I was talking about, this is the Cap Figure Podcast. This is episode 2. I'm Ryan DiPaolo, and that guy is
Tom McLaughlin.
Full and check swing. I made that up because I almost said full swing one time, and then I was like, that's generic and not my idea. So with baseball in check swing, and also because we had to return mics and deal with a lot of equipment to get this podcast on its feet, we were thinking about what off-season moves you teams may regret already. 2 months into the season, and so Tom, we're gonna go over some off-season acts, and I'm gonna ask you if you think that the teams would redo it, or we're gonna discuss. And one of the most horrible, obvious ones that first comes to mind is the Ken Giles to Houston for a boatload of pitchers that you will now name.
Yeah. So. The Astros acquired reliever Ken Giles this offseason, and in order to acquire him, the Astros sent Vince Velasquez, who was the number 4 starting pitcher in their rotation last year. They also, in that package, gave up Mark Appel, who was the number 1 overall pick back in 2012, starting pitcher. He has yet to really hit his potential in the minors, but you know, there's a reason why he was picked number 1 overall, and if he, you know, kind of pulls it together, the Phillies will be very happy. Phillies also acquired Brett Oberholzer, who's another, you know, highly touted prospect. And, you know, the other two in the trade were Thomas Eshelman, who was a second-round pick of the Astros a couple years ago, starting pitcher, and Harold Arroz.
Yeah, so Velasquez started, just Velasquez alone, I would argue, and people have argued, that with Ken Giles pitching not that well in Houston, and Gregerson keeping his closer job, although that doesn't really matter, just on Velasquez's pitching alone, that the trade straight up might not be a redo. Velasquez has pitched to a 3.6 ERA this year in 12 starts. He's 5-2 with 73 strikeouts and 61 innings pitched. He's 24 years old. It's really that straight up. It's like, no.
Yeah, starting pitching is the most difficult asset to come by in the game. Young, controllable starting pitching with upside left on the table. This deal just looks horrible for the Astros.
Now it's like, you know, they went through this long rebuild. Like, well, I mean,
yeah. So, you know, when GM Jeff Lunho took over the position with the Astros after leaving the St. Louis Cardinals, he came in with this, you know, rebuilding plan where the Astros, you know, basically, for lack of a better word, tanked for a couple of years. They picked number one overall for, you know, 2 years in a row. Then they picked number two overall. They put together this amazing young core of position players, Correa, Altuve, Springer. And on top of that, they had young pitching coming up to the majors, and, you know, plan is all in line. They're very patient all the way through. And then the first, you know,
the first glimpse of success, right. And they bug out,
they go all in, and it's hard to blame them because he's waiting so many years for these players to come up,
exhibiting
a little bit more patience. You know, the Astros would love to have Vince Velasquez right now in their rotation.
Right. Same for the fans, man. And when you look at the Cubs as a comp of who's worrying about long-term simultaneously. So, so obviously we both think that no good on Ken Giles. So the other trade is a Craig Kimbrel trade. What do you think of that Craig Kimbrel trade?
So, yeah, this is another trade in the offseason for an elite relief pitcher. The Red Sox acquired Craig Kimbrel from the Padres, and they gave up a glut of young prospects. You know, this is another one where...
Wait, name them.
Manuel Margot, Javier Guerrera, Logan Allen, and Carlos Asuje.
They're all babies still, so we don't know if they're going to be good or not yet, right? They're rookie baby... Not rookie, you know.
Yeah.
Baby babies.
You know, and the Red Sox had the deep farm system to be able to sort of splash around and overpay a little bit for, you know, an elite player. But what's interesting about this trade to me is the Red Sox are a big market team, and there were a number of elite relievers on the free agent market this offseason. So if the Red Sox had, you know, offered a contract to someone like Darren O'Day, even if they had to overpay compared to what the Orioles offered him, you know, I think the Red Sox would have been able to sign him. And even if they would have had to give up a compensation pick, that package all in is nowhere near close to what they gave up to get Kimbrel.
Right.
And on top of it, the Red Sox, you know, they assumed all of the future contract obligations for Kimbrel. So, you know, not that that's uncommon, but when you look at the all-in value of what the Red Sox gave up for this, it far exceeds, you know, what they got back from Kimbrel.
Like, well, more for, well, like, to your point, it's like a bigger market team. The more the dollar to prospect ratio in terms of value is like, because every team is only going to have a finite amount of prospects, theoretically. Like, there's this big a finite pool, but money is relative to every team. And so the Red Sox have more money freely than they do prospects. So, that's a really good point. So the other one that you probably may wreck more is the Shelby Miller trade.
Yeah, this, you know, for people in the know of, you know, MLB, this trade has been probably the most discussed. Disgusting. Yes, exactly. Disgusting.
Hey.
On every level, the Arizona Diamondbacks, they went all in this offseason. They signed Zach Greinke when nobody thought they would. They actually offered a contract to Cueto. You remember that? They didn't end up signing Cueto. But so that, you know, they splashed around. They were all in on this season, and that's great for the franchise. The Diamondbacks have really been kind of a floundering franchise for a long time. But, you know, this trade in particular, there's really, the rationale is hard to kind of wrap your head around.
And Shelby Miller had been good. He made his first All-Star game, but they gave up Ender and Ciarte. Aaron Blair and the first overall pick, Dansby Swanson. And there were reports that, like, the Diamondbacks, even though they took him first overall, the owner didn't like him, which is so stupid. Like, just because you don't value your own prospect has nothing to do with his value with the rest of the league. So, like, you were telling me how good Ender has been just on his own, huh?
Yeah. So, Ender Inciarte, he is the prototypical defensive center fielder. He didn't always play center field in Arizona because they had AJ Pollock. But let's break this trade down into pieces. With Inciarte alone, he had, coming into the season, only played in 250 career games. And by Fangraphs and Baseball Reference WAR, wins above replacement, Ender Inciarte was an 8.9. And that is kind of touching into that elite territory. You know, if you can produce 8.9 wins above replacement in about a season and a half, you know, this is still a young player. He has a lot of upside.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's sick. And you know, it's the type of player we love, like a left-handed bat, center fielder, hits well against righties for contact. He has a Guido chin strap. He's cool. And oh, look, we didn't even mention yet how crappy Shelby Miller has been horrible this year. Like, after the last 3 years, I'm starting in 2013, ERA of 3.06, 374, 302. I know that's like a monkey stat, but, you know, we'll get more sabermetric, maybe episode 3 or 4. But and then this year, 7.09 ERA and a 1-6 record. Not that that matters, because last year he made the All-Star game with 17 losses. But he has only 30 strikeouts in 45 innings compared to 171 last year and 200, et cetera. And, you know, he's really been horrible.
Yeah, this is you could see where the Diamondbacks were going, right? They signed Zach Greinke. They have Patrick Corbin coming back off of a long-term elbow injury. He is also...
I forgot about how much hype there was for Corbin, too, like, before the season. He's been a disappointment.
Yeah, so you have three potential front-end-of-the-rotation starters, which, if you get to the playoffs, that's great. But this team is not going to get to the playoffs this year. You know, you look at the other parts of this trade... Dansby Swanson, number one overall pick in 2015, Vanderbilt shortstop. By all accounts, he's going to be an above average major league player.
Yeah,
shortstop,
even if he plays second base, he has a sick hit tool, apparently, blah, blah, blah. He has good flow in his hair, and they said he might come up soon. Like, he's already close to being ready, potentially, in the next couple months, even though that may have to do with Atlanta, whatever.
Yeah, you know, he was one of the more polished players in the draft last year, ready to contribute right away, like you said. And, you know, I want to touch on Aaron Blair, who is sort of what seemed like the throw-in in this trade. But Aaron Blair was 23-year-old starting pitcher at the time, a first-round pick, and he was the number three prospect in Arizona's system prior to this trade. You know, with players coming up to the big leagues younger and younger, you know, you have to ask the question, wouldn't Blair have cracked the end of the rotation for the Diamondbacks this season had they not traded him?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, dude, you sent me an article that from the day of the trade, it titled on ESPN, Braves Rob Diamondbacks and Shelby Miller Trade. So I know we've been talking really strongly, like, about these in hindsight, and maybe that's a little unfair because we have the benefit of the Ken Giles and all this stuff. Even though we didn't like them at the time, I never liked closer deals. I think it's fair to say that even on this one, we're not real. We maybe a little bit. We're being hard in hindsight, but it's still, it wasn't liked at the time.
Yeah, this, if I were to redo this trade, I don't think I would give up either Inciarte or Dansby Swanson by themselves for Shelby Miller. The more I look at Inciarte's numbers, the more I have, you know, qualms about the fact that Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart went ahead and made this trade. Inciarte, last season, 29 defensive runs saved, second best at the position, only behind Kevin Kiermaier, who had one of the all-time great seasons defensively. So, Inciarte, you're looking at a player who's, you know, one of the top two or three defensive center fielders in the game. That alone by itself, that has so much value to it. you know, this is so difficult for me to wrap my head around. And I think that the Diamondbacks are going to be paying the price for this for quite a while.
That's Shebby Mole. Sheb. I got it. Everything's okay. So Ian Desmond. Now we're going to go to some good ones. Mikey or Tom, whatever your name is, my boss. This is not a trade, but a free agent. Ack. Ian Desmond, you know, he was a shortstop, obviously, for the Nationals, won 3 Silver Sluggers in a row, was great, turned down $100 million before last season. They wanted Noah Syndergaard from the Mets in a potential trade for a one-year rental is how good his like, clout was. And then he had a year with 27 errors and pre-All-Star, hit .211 with a 580-something OPS, and his stock got killed to the point where all he got was 1 year, $8 million, to not play his position in the offseason. And yet...
Yeah, and this is so crazy to me. The perception flipped so quickly on Ian Desmond. I remember that trade you were talking about, Noah Syndergaard for Ian Desmond. That seemed like a deal the Mets should have done at the time.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, a lot of fans were like, oh, we're just one shortstop away, and then they asked too much.
But Desmond was, for all intents and purposes, a poor man's version of Troy Tulowitzki in his prime. You know, huge bat, solid defensively.
Yeah, 20 homers a year.
And what we saw was his rough start to the beginning of last season, and maybe, you know, him turning down that big money contract, the perception of him just literally flipped. It seemed like overnight.
Well, what do you mean, why would him turning down the contract make his perception bad?
I guess maybe, you know, he... fans would have been upset with him, maybe. He could have had that in the back of his mind that, you know, he turned down this money. And, you know, he may have, when he struggled to start the year, it may have been in his head and affected his play.
Right. Oh, yeah. So it doesn't affect you. Right. It definitely compounded when he had like 6 errors in the first week last year. And there's definitely in your head when you pull a Joe Flacco or whatever and you bet on yourself and you start screwing up, that's gotta suck, man.
Yeah, and it, you know, this offseason, Desmond wasn't signed until very, very late.
Yeah.
I think it was almost into, you know, spring training.
It was early in, and it was a team, you know, the Rangers were just like, okay, you know, I guess their thinking is, you know, we're close enough that we don't mind giving up. It's not like a team like the Brewers giving up a compensation pick for a one-year Ian Desmond. But this is a team that has a shortstop that they're not really going to move in Elvis Andrews. Definitely no third base. And definitely not second base with Odor or Jurickson.
Yeah, the Rangers, that was a head-scratcher when they signed Desmond. Because out of all the teams that Desmond could potentially have landed with, I think the Rangers probably would have been near the bottom of the list that I would have constructed.
Yeah, I think it was more a head-scratcher that nobody until them did it. I don't think it's a head-scratcher. And maybe I'm saying this in hindsight, but at the time, I don't think it was a head-scratcher. The biggest shock was that no team who a little bit needed a shortstop signed him, you know, like maybe the Mets or whatever, like, or earlier in the offseason.
Well, yeah, that's where I'm getting at with the head-scratching part. The team that has a shortstop, has a second baseman, has a third baseman, has their whole outfield set, you know, for them to sign him, to me, I would have never put my money on the Rangers, but it ended up being a good fit, as we can see. And you know, this is just another example of you can have a starting lineup to start the season and it can look great, but then when injuries start to take place, it's always great to have a player like Ian Desmond coming
funny.
Off.
There's always that sentiment about rotations. Like, oh, every year the media and people are like foreseeing enough to know, like, oh, you're going to need a 6th starter, you're going to need this, so there's no problem at buying extra starters. But you don't really hear that as much with lineups, because it's not as often that, you know, pitchers do get hurt more than position players. But then Chu goes out, Hamilton, whatevs, Delino, you say Delino, I say Delino, let's bench him and put Desmond. So, but you know, with all that said, it's like, it's still 1 year, $8 million, and they've gotten 2.4 wins already this year, according to Baseball Reference, compared to 2.0 wins last year.
Yeah, and that, you know, we didn't even mention Desmond did not really have too much of a track record playing in the outfield at any sort of professional level. So there were definitely questions about that. But when you watch him out in the field there, he seems like a natural. You know, one stat that was absolutely shocking to me, and it just shows that, you know, this move was an absolute, you know, grand slam, was that Desmond is number one in all of baseball in win probability added. And, you know, that's probably, you know, the most important stat. You know, he is contributing to a team that is winning games. He's directly responsible. And, you know, Desmond, I think, has recouped a lot of the value that he gave up in that $100 million plus extension he turned down a couple years ago.
What a hot take, Tom. You think he made some money back? That's really bold of you to say that a 2.4 winning center fielder shortstop who can hit 25 home runs, who's playing like himself, is going to be worth more than $8 million next year. It's bold.
Yeah, well, all right, here's my real hot take. I believe that Desmond will be offered a multi-year extension by another team as a center fielder. And I will even go out on a limb and say that he will get in the neighborhood of 5 years, $90 million.
Yeah, well, you don't mean extend. You mean just a new contract.
A new contract,
right?
Yeah. Or an extension.
I think
from the
I wouldn't be surprised if he got 100. Like if he got what his old offer was, because here's his stats. So he's played 20. Before this year, he had played three games or four games at outfield. He started two games in the outfield for the Nationals and got time in two other games. And this year, he started out in left field. He had three errors in 27 games started, and then now they started playing him in center field. In 37 games started, he only has one error. His fielding percentage, for whatever that's worth, went from 929 in left field to 990 in center. And again, that's just him getting more comfortable, probably. But the first day they played him in center, I remember a podcast I love, Effectively Wild, was like laughing at, like, oh, well, apparently managers are putting anyone in the outfield these days, because it was like, you just expect this guy to play center, and he's been killing it.
Yeah, you know, center fielders in the major leagues, you don't just step into that position. All of the elite defensive center fielders, they've been groomed to play that position since the age of like 15 or 16. They're among the best athletes in the world. And on top of it, you know, we're not even mentioning, you need to have the natural instincts to be able to read the ball off of the bat. And center field is much more difficult than either of the two corner outfield spots, in that there's a lot more to read. You have to be able to react to the ball going to either foul pole. It's actually very, very astonishing to me that he's able to step into there. And, you know, now that you're mentioning it, I could see Desmond even getting a bigger contract than he was offered by the Nationals because of his versatility.
Right.
You know, this is a league right now where we have seen that the utility player has become an actual position, and teams are paying for it. If Desmond can go to the market, he can play any of the outfield positions. He can most certainly fill in at shortstop.
Right, utility in the new sense, not the classic sense. Utility meaning a player who starts every game but can play multiple positions, not like a utility bench dude. Like,
absolutely, a utility player who starts every game and gives the managers the versatility to be able to sit who he wants based on, you know, the splits of the hitter versus the starting pitcher, or just to give a player rest.
Word. So we'll finish on Desmond, but I just want to give his stats for this year at the plate. He's hitting .309, on base .355. He has a .843 OPS, 17 walks. He walks maybe 40 times a year, and 9 home runs in 64 games. And again, that one error in 10 more games in center than left is really telling, and his WAR, it's great.
And then the one stat that, you know, you should also throw in there is 12 stolen bases.
Oh, word.
So he's contributing in all areas of the game.
So we talked about three that the teams definitely would not do again, and the Desi Thank God the Mets didn't give up anything for him, or Carlos Gomez for that matter. So speaking of Carlos, no, not really. It's a horrible segue. I'll get better, guys. You know, it's only episode 2. My host skills is getting slightly better every week and stuff, you know.
Stock options.
Oh, no. I got Mike Francesa. That's a really good scoop. All right, so we're going to talk about some trade stuff because, you know, that's how we roll. You sent me this awesome article, and very early in the season, you wrote an article about the Rangers' need for a catcher when Chirinos went down. So I'm going to ask you about Luke Roy in a second, but we're going to go through a couple of these and then just a few, and I'm going to tell you the teams that this article is saying are the best fits, and you tell me your thoughts. So they have Luke Roy, who's hitting .303. He has 9 home runs. He's slugging .512. You know, and the Brewers are obviously horrible and in a total rebuild. This says the Rays are the best fit for Luke Roy. They can afford his contract, blah, 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 and it says best fits Rays, Astros, Mets.
I think that they're a little bit off on this. I think the Astros would definitely make sense. The Mets, I don't know. They have Travis d'Arnaud. If I were to make this list, I would have the Astros and the Rangers still. Luke Roy is probably the best catcher that I've seen on the trade market in a long time.
Yeah, man.
He's the best pitch framer, you know, historically over the past few years. And what that means is when a pitcher throws the ball, it can be out of the strike zone, but based on how the catcher does not move his glove or does move his glove, he can frame it and make it look like a strike. So Luke Roy is great at getting those borderline calls. He's an all-around, he's basically everything you would want from a catcher. He has a great bat, and you know, that is a building piece that could help a team, particularly the Astros and 100% the Rangers, would be an enormous upgrade. I'm sure that the Brewers are looking to get a lot in return for him, but as we touched on before, the Astros still have a very deep farm system, and the Rangers do as well. I think Luke Roy would immediately step in, be an everyday starter, and could be one of those vital chips that could take either of those teams to a World Series.
And I was going to make fun of you for calling him a building piece when it's a rental, but there's a team option on him for next year, so they'd get him for the rest of 2016, his age 30 season, and then there's a $5.25 million team option on 2017.
And that's obviously well below the market value of a player like Luke Roy.
Right. Completing my best Carlos transition of all time, coming full circle now, as great radio hosts do. Carlos Gonzalez, he's owed $17 million this year, so whatever the rest of that would be prorated, and $20 million next year. This ESPN you know, listing of them suggests the Cardinals, Royals, Mariners, and Dodgers as possible trade the spots, trade I can't speak today. Trade landing spots. What do you think? Who stands out to you of those four?
Of those four, I would say that the St. Louis Cardinals probably make the most sense.
Tom pointed to his computer screen as if the Cardinals were playing in this room.
Yeah, the Cardinals are actually playing on my screen right now. I have you know, this graphic open with their starting lineup, and there's a big circle in right field, and I'm about to put Carlos Gonzalez right in it because this is by far the best fit for him. This is where I see Cargo being traded at the deadline. The Cardinals have both the financial flexibility to pick up this contract and the positional need. What Cargo brings to a team is he obviously brings his huge left-handed bat, which the Cardinals have been looking for quite some time. In the offseason, the Cardinals were rumored to be in the Chris Davis sweepstakes, if you will. When Cargo heats up, as we saw in the second half of last year, he can carry a team by himself. The biggest question right now with the Cardinals is a left-handed power bat, and Cargo could step in right away and basically eradicate that concern. If you add Cargo to the Cardinals, then you have, you know, a lineup that you could actually see threatening a team like the Cubs in the playoffs.
So they have the 11th, 9th highest payroll, which is higher than I thought. I thought they may be a little frugal or reluctant to pay a player this much for 2 years. But like you said, they were trying. They were in the Chris Davis sweepstakes, and you know they're definitely looking to add offense. Since I'm stuttering. I have no point to make. Let me ask you about the Dodgers. Like, what about them? Yasiel Puig sucks. The Dodgers have a $243 million payroll, and they have $64 million on the disabled list, the Dodgers. But so they wouldn't care about the money, obviously. They have a ton of like farm system like pieces, but I don't know how many do you think the Rockies would even require? I think they'd be happy to dump the salary to some extent because they're not competitive. You think they need a lot of pieces also?
I disagree. Cargo right now is probably their biggest trade chip. There are a lot of teams that could use his bat. The Rockies don't have a large payroll otherwise. And back to your point with the Dodgers, yes, they have the financial flexibility to add salary, but Cargo, one, doesn't make sense to me for the Dodgers from just a, you know, player standpoint. And secondly, I don't think the Dodgers are just going to add salary for the sake of adding salary. Like you mentioned, they have upwards of $60 million on the disabled list. Then you add in the money that they're paying to players that are on other teams.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Dodgers were willing to put up with that for a little while, but, you know, they obviously don't want to keep, you know, this large amount of dead money. From a player standpoint, I don't think the Dodgers really need a right fielder.
Wait, what about the Rockies? You didn't answer my question. Do you think the Rockies would just like give him away because if it's such salary relief? Like,
I don't think so.
Do you need to give up? How good of a prospect do you think you need to give up to get him?
I think the Rockies would be looking for, you know, one of the Dodgers' better pitching prospects. Obviously not Urias. But the Rockies would be looking for, you know, a starting pitching
like a
prospect.
C plus or something?
I don't know what you mean by a C plus, but I think that they would be looking for a pitching prospect in the minor leagues who's very close to coming up, who could provide an impact right away. Cargo has a ton of value, and there's going to be a bidding war because, quite frankly, the other left-handed bats in the outfield that are going to be available on the market are just nowhere near the same category as Cargo.
Yeah.
You add in the extra year of control. I know $20 million sounds like a lot, but for a player with his sort of bat, it's not by any means a ridiculous salary.
Yeah, but that's more than 20% of only 13 teams in the league have a payroll of $100 million or more. I'm sorry, I misspoke. Only 13 teams on their 25-man roster have a payroll of $100 million or more. So all the other teams in the bottom of the league, the bottom 16 teams, him for 1 year would be 20% of their 25-man roster payroll. So I just think you're underrating the money part of this. Not that that applies for what you just, the points you made about the Cardinals, but I don't think the Rockies have a leg to stand on to ask for much anything, maybe some crappy prospects, and the salary relief, like, you know, would be enough.
I couldn't disagree more. Cargo is easily the most valuable player offensively in the second half of last season.
Yeah, we know.
This is a player that is an impact player. You're going to get something back from him. I don't care how much his salary is. The Rockies wherewithal to hold on to the salary. They're going to get something from him, I guarantee you.
We'll see. All right, dog. So we'll see. You know, all right. You want to talk tough now, Charlie? We'll see when push comes to shove, all right? All right there, Chuckles?
I would be willing to wager any amount.
All right, let's move on because, you know, I'm really wrong.
Obviously.
The Yankees, Los Yankees, you know, it was the Puerto Rican Day Parade here recently, and like basketball, to honor, you know, the Spanish community, they'll just put El Heat, Los Knicks, like El Yankees, have two, I heard they're okay, these lefty, like, relievers, I don't know, Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, do you know much about these guys? Apparently that they can trade them and get some value.
Never heard of them. So the Yankees obviously have you know, the most talked about bullpen in the game, Dellin Betances, Aroldis Chapman, Andrew Miller. And if we've learned anything from, you know, Brian Cashman's history, is that anybody's on the table at any time. With Aroldis Chapman, you're looking at, you know, a player where he is kind of in his own league. If you are looking for a left-handed pitcher who throws the ball hard, he's obviously your guy. He's hit 102 on the radar gun plenty of times. Chapman is a free agent at the end of the year, and if the Yankees are not in the race, and potentially even if they are, I think that Cashman will be looking to get back a boatload for Chapman. And then the other player available, as you mentioned, would be Andrew Miller. I think that out of the two, Miller is less likely to be dealt, but Miller provides more value to a potential trade partner because of the fact that he still has another year, actually, I believe, two more years left on his deal at $9 million a year, which when you see the contract values being given to relievers and how that's escalating at a rapid pace, you know, Miller really looks like a bargain. And you add to the fact that he is the one of the elite left-handed relief pitchers in the game, and you know, Miller could, again, another player who could bring back, you know, major league ready type prospects who could contribute for a while. Couple of other things to touch on. You know, the Yankees, I believe, could still be in the race and trade these players. You know, I would be hesitant to say that the Yankees are going to be in the playoff race, but I think that given, you know, the lack of other elite relievers on the market, I think that there's going to be a bidding war.
Right, and they might get offered way too much that they have to take it, you mean, even if they're in it?
Yeah, so, you know, like, if you think about some of the teams that need left-handed relief pitching.
I can think of 30.
Yeah, all of them. And especially teams like Cubs, Nationals, Dodgers, Giants, all of these teams have incredibly deep farm systems, and this is one of those situations where, let's say, a team like the Cubs, you know, they're not able to, you know, they know that their bullpen will be what could cost them a chance at the title. They might be willing to part with a couple of those impact prospects for the shot to win this year, and I think it would make sense for both sides. The Yankees, you know, I've written about this. The Yankees are, in my opinion, they're not really in it this year. They're a team that could get lucky, could make the playoffs, but Cashman has his eye on 2017, 2018, and beyond. So I think he would be happy to continue to build for the future if he can acquire, you know, a couple of young position players, or, you know, any sort of quality arm that he could add to the rotation.
Yeah, so Andrew Miller is signed. He's through 2018, and he signed that four-year, $36 million, way below market value deal to stay because he wanted to play for the Yankees. You know, he a trade for him is more interesting, even though Chapman is great, obviously. But, you know, teams reluctant to give away good prospects for a rental. You look at Cole Hamels last year, the Rangers traded for it was similar. He has 2.5 years left. It was a move for both, even though Hamels' contract is a lot more than Andrew Miller's. It's still a left-handed pitcher, which is just kind of random, but a pitcher with multiple years left that was traded in season, and it was so like a move for the team getting the player for this year and down the road. Also, I need to troll you a bit, because I thought it was retarded, and I think relievers are overrated to some extent, and I thought it was silly to get excited about the three-headed monster when your team isn't good enough. You know, it seems funny, and people counter-argue with me, you know, the game is over in the seventh inning, but if you have a lead, it's over. Like I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a very, very simpleton argument, but I do want to troll you that it's like, I want to make fun of you for being excited. Your team is old. I would trade both. I would trade everybody if I were you. Trade them all. Sue everybody. Punitive damages.
You're trolling me, but I agree with you. I think that the Yankees should trade all of. I think.
No,
the
but you
Yankees
were happy
preseason.
You like the Chapman trade.
Oh, I love
you
the Chapman trade because what the Yankees gave up to get Chapman was absolutely nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I respect that. That's a good point. Yeah.
I was excited from the standpoint of arguably the best closer in the game, and if we're out of the race, we could probably trade him for much more than we gave up.
Yeah, I had the same argument with Sam about, I was yelling so much at a friend, my friend Sam, who I live with, who's messy, about when the Jets signed Darrell Revis. He was saying, Colin Cowherd said, well, you don't have a quarterback, so it doesn't matter. That's kind of the argument I'm making, and I was like, no, you idiot. That doesn't mean we don't analyze this move by itself and how excited I am that we got Revis back. And I just heard, and that makes total sense about, no, look at the merits of the Chapman deal on its own. It doesn't matter that our team sucks. It's like, that was a good deal. So, point well taken, but your team is old, dog.
I agree, and I think, you know, as I've written about, the moves Cashman have been making recently, he didn't spend a dollar in free agency this offseason. He made a trade to acquire Didi Gregorius two offseasons ago. He made a trade to acquire Starlin Castro this offseason. Cashman's putting together these young positional players up the middle, and he's waiting for the contracts of CeCe Sabathia, Mark Teixeira, Carlos Beltran. Once those guys are sort of off the books, you know, he's freeing up what will amount to probably over $100 million of salary. The Yankees are paying the price for that championship a couple of years ago, similar to the way the Phillies were. The difference is the Yankees really, for whatever reason, don't go into full rebuild mode. And I think
because they can't, because you guys don't show up, because you're front runners from Connecticut.
Yeah, exactly. We're all front runners. And I think, you know, Cashman is one of the best GMs in the league, and he is going to do what's best for the team long term.
Yeah, so just real quick, I could relate to waiting, except we don't have a championship to pay for it all the years where it's like, oh, we just got to get Johan and Jason Bay off the books, Johan Santana, and then the Mets will spend. And then we got Granderson, but whatever.
But we got Bryce Harper waiting, you know.
Right,
Bryce
Harper, for $450 million.
Right field, $500 million.
All right, so that'll do it for today. You know, we'll talk more about this trade. I'm sure it'll be a lot of talk coming up as baseball gets further and further into check swing. I can't. I'm so corny, man. I'll get better at this, and as will Tom. But so, for the Cap Figure Podcast, I'm Ryan DiPaolo, and I'm for the Cap Figure Podcast. Tom McLaughlin is that guy, and I'm Ryan DiPaolo. Bye.
That's why you're a clown. Bye.